Shadrick Muhammad from the Black Coffee Channel.
All right, let's talk about why I wrote this book. October 7, 2009, Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. I want to start this from an economic perspective. Practical. Deal with the reality and the situation that we're in now, okay? I have prepared remarks. These are just some notes. Some points I want to make clear, because I'm really not, I'm dead serious. That's why I did not want to start the show promoting my book, because I think I would have been a little too raw. Let me see if I can work with this. That was Meet the Press panel discussion. Let me just state some facts as I see them. 7.2 million jobs lost since the recession started, officially noted as December 2007, correct? There was an article. It was called, "It Will Be Years Before Lost Jobs Return and Many Never Will." It was written by Sudeep Reddy in the Outlook column of the Wall Street Journal on Monday, October 5th. I suggest you take a look at that. In 2003, the Treasury Department economist Alan Krueger, then at Princeton University, he calculated that 25% of the U.S. workers were in jobs that the Census Bureau did not even list as occupations in 1967. What does that mean? It's related to a concept called creative destruction in economics. It means that the economy changes so much that you could have jobs and occupations that are created that you can't foresee. So in 2003, 25% of the jobs that were in existence at that time were not even listed. There was no concept of them in 1967. So where will we be 40 years from now? Think about that. Now, at the current rate of population growth, just population growth, the economy of the United States of America needs to create 1.2 million jobs a year, 100,000 per month, just to keep up with population growth. So let's deal with now some projections based upon these realities. According to Rutgers University professor Joseph Seneca, and I must, hold on, any of you listeners, I see you. I had to standing ovate Joseph Seneca, who I believe this is J.J. Seneca, Rutgers University. I had to flash a picture. J.J. Seneca. He was the professor of the year at Rutgers University when I was there. But then he made the mistake of taking an administration job. If this is the same Joseph Seneca, he was the man. I had to give him credit for instilling love, deeper love for economics. J.J. Seneca, if you had him at Rutgers University, let me know. I'll put a picture up of him. Anyway, he says that even if the job market returns to the job growth rate that existed under the Clinton years, which was 2.15 million private sector jobs created a year, which is double the rate under Bush and Cheney, the United States wouldn't get back to 5% unemployment until the year 2017. Again, if the economy went back to creating jobs rather than losing them at the rate of 2.15 million a year, the United States economy still would not get back to 5% unemployment until 2017. So now let's look at what our president wants to do. He wants to create 5 million green jobs. Go tell somebody I'm breaking this down. I'm explaining why you're going to have to start a business. Or somebody near you is going to have to start a business. President Obama wants the U.S. to create 5 million green jobs. That's solar, wind, energy efficiency over the next decade. But that requires advances in current technology from transmission lines, energy storage, and advances in training. You need infrastructure and training in order to do that. 5 million jobs, very optimistic. But even if he gets that, you still are looking at massive unemployment, or significant unemployment, if job growth was created at the rate of the Clinton years. Now, HIS Global Insight, a company, economic forecasting company, they predicted the total number of jobs in the United States won't return to pre-recession levels until 2013. Do you have that long to wait? And that doesn't account for the growth in the labor force. But getting back to 5% unemployment, which many people believe is the structural level of unemployment that the United States can handle, or mandates, that's a whole nother subject about whether the United States economy actually needs a certain amount of people to be unemployed. I think it does. Another show, another day. But getting back to that goal of 5% unemployment, they don't see 5.75% unemployment being reached until 2019. These jobs are not coming back. Alan Blinder, let me talk about him. Former Federal Reserve Governor, he says that up to 30 to 40 million jobs in the United States of America are offshoreable. What's the difference between outsourcing and offshoring? Outsourcing is when one company gets another company to take on responsibilities it used to handle in-house. Offshoring is when a company actually moves its business process or physical place of activity to another country. They do the same job in another country, same company though, offshoring. Well, the combination of outsourcing and offshoring, by Alan Blinder's estimate, 30 to 40 million jobs are offshoreable. Now, 30 to 40 million, yes. Now, this goes back to what I said about the Department of Labor job descriptions as of 1967. 25% of them did not, 25% of the jobs that existed in 2003 were not even mentioned in the 1967 census. So that number of 30 to 40 million jobs being offshored is realistic because of the natural creative destruction that takes place in an economy. I'm making the case empirically and anecdotally for why you will have to come face to face with entrepreneurship, not job creation by the government, not multinational corporations coming to empowerment zones in the hood hiring people for $7 an hour. I'm talking about you, your people, you all, the hood, the fraternity, the sorority, you all starting a business and financing it yourself. No bank loan. So Alan Blinder indicates, he says it's going to be painful because our country offers such a poor social safety net to cushion the blow for displaced workers. Our unemployment insurance program is stingy by first world standards. We're going through this debate now. But when you lose your job, what they call trade adjustment assistance, it does not prepare you. It's not funded significantly. A government can't really reorient and retrain people anyway. This is why entrepreneurship is important. Let me say this again, because I said this last night on Make It Plain. You can hear Matsumela's show, Sirius 146, 5 to 8 p.m. every weekday. A government can't teach a person how to perceive an opportunity and build a business organization to pursue it. A government can create jobs. A government can support certain industries. A government can employ a mass group of people, but it cannot train an individual person to perceive opportunity and create a business organization to pursue it. That's entrepreneurship. That's the marriage between an individual self-interest and a collective need. Entrepreneurship to me is the perfect middle ground between the individual and the society. Because even if you create something and you take the Republican motto, which you pulling yourself up by the bootstraps, American rugged capitalism, you still had to sell it, the stuff to a mass of people. So entrepreneurship is always a social activity. In my book, I talk about what a business really is. A business really is a society. It's a form of a society. Volume 1, Political Economy, The Entrepreneurial Secret. Back to Alan Blinder. He says American workers who lose their jobs often lose their health insurance and pension rights as well. So there's a dramatic decrease in wealth when you lose a job. Future, in the present and the future tense. And he says, and even though many displaced workers will have to change occupations, a difficult task for anyone, only a fortunate few will be offered opportunities for retraining. All that needs to change. Let me hit this last part. Listen closely. Please go tell somebody. It's very important. This is from an article he wrote in 2007, Alan Blind. It was called Free Trade's Great, But Offshoring Rattles Me. May 6, 2007, written before the recession officially hit, before the financial panic. Listen closely, then I want to give you audio from some more audio from the Sunday's shows and a very respected chief economist yesterday, what he says. We're in for a lot of pain. Alan Blinder writes, he says, in addition, we need to rethink our education system so that it turns out more people who are trained for the jobs that will remain in the United States and the fewer and fewer for the jobs that will migrate overseas. We cannot, of course, foresee exactly which jobs will go and which will stay. But one good bet is that many electronic service jobs will move offshore, whereas personal service jobs will not. Here are a few examples. Listen up. Tax accounting is easily offshoreable. On-site auditing is not. Computer programming is offshoreable. Computer repair is not. Architects could be endangered, but builders are not. And I'll give you an example I just learned about. Are any of you all familiar with architectural plans that you can buy ready-made for homes? You don't need an architect to do anything personally for you, custom. This can be done. This can be done with people who never meet you, standardized architectural plans. So Alan Blinder is right. Architects could be endangered, but builders are not. Were it not for stiff regulations, radiology would be offshoreable, but pediatrics and geriatrics are not. Lawyers who write contracts can do the same at a distance and deliver them electronically. This is what's happening with architects. But litigators who argue cases in court cannot. So you have to find your place in the economy. You have to encourage people, young people, to think ahead. What jobs are going to be outsourced, offshoreable? Which jobs and which industries are not? And then think about business opportunities. An entrepreneur is a person who perceives an opportunity and builds an organization to pursue it. Perception is a big part of that. Now, let me get back to the Sunday shows. I want to look at, let's go to this week, Alan Greenspan on this week. And then I'm going to hit one more, a chief economist that I respect greatly. Go tell somebody, Cedric Muhammad, Black Electorate, Black Coffee Channel. Very important discussion today, why you need to look at entrepreneurship, not through the lens of Democrat, Republican, but through the lens of self-preservation, wealth redistribution, and I would say self-actualization. Here's Greenspan. And by the way, my other economics professor at Rutgers, he used to say America is known for the potato chip and the credit crunch and the atom bomb. And he used to call this man Alan Greenspan.
Think back to December 2007. George Bush was in the White House. Hillary Clinton was the favorite to replace him. Unemployment was 4.9%. Today, it's double that. America's economy has lost jobs for 21 straight months, the longest stretch in 70 years. More than 7 million jobs gone. There are six Americans competing for every open job. Yesterday, President Obama promised to make that problem his top priority.
I'm working closely with my economic team to explore additional options to promote job creation. And I won't let up until those who seek jobs can find them, until businesses that seek capital and credit can thrive, and until all responsible homeowners can stay in their homes.
And with that, let me bring in the man who's known more about the American economy for more time than just about anybody in the country, former Fed Chair Alan Greenspan. Welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, for most Americans, this jobs issue is the one that hits home the hardest. And that report on Friday was a surprise, much worse than people expected. What should Americans expect right now? How much worse is this job situation going to get for how long?
Well, it's very difficult to make judgments at a time like this, largely because we don't have so many incidents in history to be able to compare it to. But basically, I think the issue is this. The job report was pretty awful, no matter how you looked at it. Indeed, not only, of course, did the unemployment rate go up, but I was particularly concerned about the number of Americans who have been unemployed for 6 months or longer.
And 5 million Americans.
But that went up sharply in September. And remember, the reason that is a problem, obviously, other than the obvious personal difficulties that families have in such a context, is that the economy loses skills. And people who are out of work for very protracted periods of time lose their skills eventually. And remember that what makes an economy great is a combination of the capital assets of the economy and the people who run it. And if you erode the human skills that are involved there, it is a real and in one sense an irretrievable loss.
So what do we do about it?
Well, the issue is essentially economic activity. And the reason I say that is that there is a silver lining in that particular report, and it's difficult to find one. It's that American business, after Lehman Brothers collapsed and the whole financial system imploded, business expected that the economy would go down far more sharply than it in fact did. The result was they laid off a very substantial number of people to the point that the actual hours worked fell even more than the economy. So that what we're getting is artificial numbers which give us productivity gains of horrendous amounts, meaning the amount of labor input per unit of output has been going down and down, and that can't continue. So the silver lining is, at some point, we're going to start to see an improvement in employment. But remember that unless there is a monthly increase of more than 100,000 a month, you still got the unemployment rate continuing.
And that's why the administration's projections show more than 8% unemployment through 2011. You saw the president yesterday saying now he's going to look at new ideas to spur job creation. What should he be doing now? What would you advise him to do?
Well, I think the focus has got to be on trying to get the economy going. But you also have to be careful that in trying to do too much, you can actually be counterproductive. And we are in a recovery. And I think it would be a mistake to say the September numbers alter that significantly. It is true, the last couple of weeks, that some of the numbers that are coming in have been a little bit soft. But this is what a recovery looks like. In retrospect, we always look back and we see the ups and the downs and ups and the downs, and we just visually go right through it. It's premature to act on this type of information.
No new stimulus.
Oh, no new stimulus for two reasons. One, only 40% of the first stimulus has been in place. And there's a considerable debate going on in the economics profession about how effective this stimulus package is. And so, mainly because of the fact that as broad as it is and as effective as it will turn out to be, it's still got 60% left to go. So in my judgment, it's far better to wait and see how this momentum that's already begun to develop in the economy carries forward.
Back in August, you thought you'd see about 2.5% growth in this quarter. You still hold it out, or these numbers make you change that view?
No, the numbers are coming in higher than that.
Higher than that?
Oh, yes. It looks as though it's going to be 3%, maybe even possibly even higher. Problem with knowing what the third quarter is going to look like is we won't get all of the data for several months, so there's a lot of guesswork involved. But it's on track at this stage for more than 2.5%.
So more than 2.5%. So does that mean we're heading towards a situation where you could actually see an end to the job loss, or not quite yet?
Well, no, I think we're getting close to that. But remember, the end of the job loss is not the same thing as that the unemployment rate is going to start down. My own suspicion is that we're going to penetrate the 10% barrier and stay there for a while before we start down.
Given that, even though you're not for any major new stimulus, what about extending unemployment benefits for people who are out of work? We're going to have more than 1 million people lose their benefits by the end of the year. Also, the idea that there should be some tax credits to make sure that unemployed people are able to maintain their health insurance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is an extraordinary period. And temporary actions must be taken, especially to assuage the angst a very substantial part of our population. So I don't actually consider those types of actions stimulus programs. I think that they are essentially programs which support people, essentially their living standards in part. I grant you it has a stimulus effect, but that wouldn't be my primary purpose.
How about one other idea? One of the things I saw in the employment report that surprised me is how many of the cuts are coming from state and local government. We know they've really been crunched. Would it make sense, given that, for the federal government to step in with more aid for state and local governments?
Well, basically, there's a good deal of that in there. What has happened, unfortunately, is that over the last 10, 15 years, state and local governments have picked up their budgets very considerably, and they are having fiscal difficulties which the federal government itself can't really resolve. I have no view one way or the other, but I do think that will happen. If you're asking me as a forecast, as distinct from whether it's desirable or not, I think the pressures to do that will be there, but it's a very tricky political case.
How about on health care? We see the Senate Finance Committee about to pass, their health care reform, and there's a big debate. It's now become a partisan debate of whether or not this is going to help or hurt the economy, help or hurt the deficit, help or hurt on job creation. From what do you see the Senate doing right now? What's your view?
Well, I've always had the view that the real problem that we have existed before this reform proposals came in. In other words, we have a huge fiscal hole out there, which is best measured by the fact that Medicare benefits are only 50% funded, going all the way out. And what that implies is a very significant issuance of Treasury securities to meet the ever-growing and very indeterminately large federal deficit.
Okay, let me break in. That is, Greenspan's been on that point. He's 100% right on that particular point. The fiscal tsunami is that America needs to borrow money in order to fund the budget on an annual basis. That's the deficit. But then forward-looking, if you look at what the country has committed in the way of Medicare and Social Security entitlement payments, there is no way in the world that the country can pay for that without borrowing even more. So that's important. This is why I say I believe we're headed for war. For China and Russia and Iran, Saudi Arabia and Kuwait to all be getting an attitude over the fact that they have to put their dollars into U.S. treasuries to finance America's debt this early. Now, the baby boomers are the ones. It's 64. Let me see if I can say this right. I think it was 64 million Americans born since 1946, baby boomer generation, if I'm right. They're the ones that have to get Medicare and Social Security payment. The economy's not growing fast enough to do that. That's why I think we're headed for war. The rest of the world is about to check the chin of the United States. Alan Greenspan is right. If you can't grow, and I just did the numbers, if you can't grow the American economy, even with President Obama's optimistic 5 million jobs created, even if that's not enough, if you're talking about 6% unemployment still in the year 2019, country's broke. Finish, Mr. Greenspan.
You cannot continue to increase the federal debt, because remember, over the generations, we have been very careful to keep the total level of debt well below the borrowing capacity of our economy so far as federal issuance is concerned. That cushion is now being tested, and I'm getting a little concerned, and I don't want to find out where the upper levels are. And the reason it's important is that will affect long-term interest rates, and long-term interest rates are very critical.
But are these proposals going to make that problem, are they going to help it or hurt it?
Well, it depends on what the CBO writes on the Senate Finance Committee bill. We don't know what those numbers are going to look like yet. But I would say revenue neutral is not adequate. In other words, we have to not only have a revenue neutral reform program, but simultaneously recognize that we have to address the longer term.
Mr. Greenspan, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Okay, now I'm ready to promote my book. Now I'm ready to promote my book, The Entrepreneurial Secret for Starting a Business. Very important. Timing, the whole nine. I've been working on this book, really off and on for 6 years. It was under another title before. But through some discussions, my inner circle, we arrived at this formula. 3-book series. Let me take some of your comments. Rod Ginyard, he weighed in from Culver City, California. Rod says, there's a reason Alan Greenspan waited until now to reappear. Even with his so-called superior economic talents, he was just as ignorant and impotent with his prognostications on the imminent freefall as Joe Blow on the street was. It goes to show that no matter how intelligent an individual appears, he or she is only as smart as you allow them to be in your own judgment. I like that. That was what I said last night on Make It Plain, Masamela Mafumo show. Sirius Channel 146, 5 to 8 p.m. weekdays. I said that I believe a poor person, materially poor person, is more qualified to fix this economy now than someone who was working at Lehman Brothers. Because of their suffering, the adversity that they've gone through, I believe that they're in a position to perceive an opportunity that could create wealth faster than somebody who's been trained. Glenn from Philly in the building. I hope Glenn is not messing up a carry trade in order to make this comment. For those that don't know, Glenn from Philly is a resident capital markets practitioner and investor, investment club aficionado. Glenn from Philly, he says, Pete said, happy blast off day for the book. I had to take the time to congratulate you on the release. In addition, is there a particular vendor that you would prefer people to purchase the books from, either from a revenue and or a promotional basis? And then he says, peace, now I have to get back to analyzing the markets and the ever-expanding price of gold. Yeah. Glenn, always asking penetrating, money-making questions. Let me answer Glenn's question forthrightly. Glenn wants to know, is there a particular vendor that I would prefer people to purchase the books from, either from a revenue or a promotional basis? Now, I don't want to go too deep into the science of this. But yes, today I would prefer, and for a few days, I would prefer if you all would buy the books from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. From a promotional basis. Not necessarily from a revenue basis, but from a promotional basis, I would prefer that you give the money to them. Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. We'll be doing something through BlackElectric.com soon. Thank you, Glenn, for your entrepreneurially incisive question. And let me talk about each volume. If you want to learn a little bit more about the book, there's an interview up by my man Andy Solage, the former news editor of BlackElectric.com. He posed some questions to me. You can see them at BlackElectric.com. Exclusive interview with me. I did not ghostwrite this. Andy is the man. You all already know him from Black Electorate. If you're in the business and building community, you might actually have met him. Andy Solage, several questions there. It gives you just a slice, few pieces of the dimensions of the book. Yeah, Amazon.com, the link is off there. But there is an official book site, which we will promote a little more heavily in the future. But The E-Secret, TheEsecret.com, The E-Secret. It's my site. You can actually watch the show there now for a minute. Let me describe or read the description for Volume 1 of this book, the cover which you were looking at. So it says here, in The Entrepreneurial Secret, Volume 1, The Political Economy, Cedric Muhammad offers a new and relevant book to help entrepreneurs and small business owners navigate a world where credit is frozen and where bank loans are hard to come by. In perhaps the only book that reveals the root of the financial crisis from the perspective of the small business owner. And this is where I get into securitization. I have a chapter. Chapter 2 is on securitization and how that pertains to a small business owner. I even got involved. I securitized, well, I won't say I did it. I advised a client of mine to get a loan securitized. I had to come clean. I'm a securitized gangster. The business proposition was so bad that I insisted that if my client wanted to make the investment, do it as a loan and securitize that bad boy. So I talk about my moment as a securitized gangster in volume 1 of The Entrepreneurial Secret.